right, we're ahead of schedule, but I think we'll keep going. So move on to agenda paper 4.
Yes, thank you. We will now move on to agenda paper 4. The committee received the request to clarify how an entity determines profit attributable to ordinary equity holders when calculating basic earnings per share. In the fact pattern submitted, the entity has two classes: equity instrument, ordinary shareholders, ordinary shares, and participating equity instrument. The entity classifies the participating equity instrument as equity. Under national tax rules, dividends on participating equity instrument are deductible. The tax benefit is attributable only to the ordinary shareholders and not to the participating equity holders. The submitter asked whether in determining profit attributable to the ordinary shareholders, the entity reflects the tax benefit that would arise from the hypothetical distribution of profit to participating equity holders. Our analysis is presented in paragraphs 13 to 27 of the paper. We think that for this fact pattern, the entity adjusts profit or loss attributable to ordinary shareholders to reflect the tax benefit. That is view one. The reasons for our conclusion is outlined in paragraphs 25 to 26 of this paper. We think that requirement IAS 33 provides an adequate basis for an entity to calculate basic earnings per share. Accordingly, we recommend that the committee does not add this issue to its agenda. Instead, we recommend publishing an agenda decision that includes educative guidance outlining how an entity applies IAS 33 to the fact pattern in the submission. We would like to ask the committee whether it agrees with our recommendation, and if yes, whether the committee has any comments on our proposed wording of the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A of the paper. Thank you.
I agree with staff's conclusion. I'd like to comment, it's a pretty good paper and very good logic, very good analysis. And also, I think it's very, very good educative agenda decision. I think it should be a benchmark.
Thank you,
Carl. I also agree with Carl. Great paper written in a great way and very easy to read. So I just want to say that I agree with this staff conclusion. All profits and losses are attributable to the ordinary shareholders, should be including the computation of the EPS. So I just say, I agree.
Thank you.
Yeah, same comments. Maybe I can add that IAS 33 is probably one of the most difficult standards to apply within the IFRS standards. And so the paper is therefore very remarkably clear, actually. And I concur with the views that this staff has reached. Maybe just on the wording of the tentative agenda decision, I would just add that on the fact pattern, one of the fact pattern that was submitted to you mentioned the fact that the dividend payments on the preferred shares, I don't remember if it's the participating shares, are discretionary, meaning that it depends whether the General Assembly declares dividends on the ordinary shares. Apart from that, my comment is just that I'm not sure that without that the conclusion would be different, but I cannot be 100% certain with IAS 33 that it would be the case. So we have to be cautious.
Sorry, I didn't see what order the cards went up. So Martin, you get in, even though you were last.
No, no. I also like the agenda paper very much in terms of it's easy to follow. My only issue is whether probably then after the next meeting when we will finalize the agenda decision, hopefully, so to say, because then it's a quick and easy one, whether we could learn something on outreach or whether it's only relevant in one jurisdiction or in more jurisdictions. So what is more or less the issue in practice around the world? So is there a widespread of diversity in praxis, or is this absolutely clear as we are all convinced? So that would be an interesting point.
I guess a couple of comments. From our experience, we haven't seen this fact pattern in practice. So to Martin's point, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a lot of diversity that exists. But I guess I was not entirely convinced of the staff's proposal that you adopt view one, that in effect, by allocating earnings to the participating shares, that you do, it's as if you did a hypothetical distribution to those participating shares, and if you had made that distribution, you would get that tax benefit. Because I think the alternate view that is expressed in the paper, I had sympathy for, you're allocating earnings, the current period earnings, to the various classes of shares. That tax benefit hasn't arisen yet. It'll only arise if, as and when, that distribution actually occurs. And so, as I say, I wasn't entirely convinced of the staff, that's as clear as the staff says, that you would treat it as a hypothetical distribution. And if you had hypothetically distributed, you would get that tax benefit, and therefore you take that tax benefit into account in the current period in determining earnings per share. So that was my comment.
I'm supportive of the staff's view. I'm in view one. But I wonder if we've thought through all the potential ramifications. I think the staff was consistent with the concept in the model, which is, okay, play the what-if game. It's what if you distributed all your earnings? What would happen in that case? And the issue that we're now facing is, well, when you do that, play this what-if game, do you consider direct consequences? And I think that is consistent with the model. I wonder, and I haven't been able to think of others, but are there other potential direct consequences that if we were to distribute all the earnings, could there be regulatory effects? Could there be effects on compensation systems? So what else are we getting into besides taxes? So that's one aspect. The other aspect that I was trying to think through is we dealt with year one, and I think it was very logical and said, okay, yes, build the tax as if you distribute, build the tax consequences into that EPS in the two-class method in year one. Well, now I go to year two, and I actually pay a dividend. If I build that in then into my EPS, because it's part of my tax benefit, it's in my P&L, am I double counting because it's part of the P&L in year two, and I already built it into my EPS in year one? And I originally thought maybe it was double counting, but now I'm not sure it is, because what's not to say, well, that dividend I paid in year two, well, that's the dividend on P&L in year two. It doesn't have to go directly back to year one. So I haven't fully developed my thoughts on this yet, but I'm wondering if maybe an example over a couple of years would be helpful.
So you both raised some timing related questions. Okay, Bruce?
Thanks. I don't disagree with the conclusion we've got to. I was quite happy with it. I guess my only challenge was, I kind of almost went, my question is a bit around the actual structure of the agenda decision. I'll tell you why. We've gone at something that I thought was kind of, from the question being asked, to put it simply, not exactly a very difficult question. We've got a two-page agenda decision. And some of the items which I think are a lot more complex we haven't. And I guess my concern was, how far do we take it? So I don't disagree with the conclusion, but I think I have similar concerns about it. Well, hang on, what about other things? What about the timing? What about this? And so I don't know, I guess, I don't know if I've really got an answer to it. I was just raising the issue that I just thought this was a very long agenda decision that addressed the one point, and my worry was, well, if people come back and say, well, hang on, what about this, what about this, we could get into drafting, much like we did on IFRS 11, 14 pages of guidance on IS 33 on something that I don't really think is a very difficult technical answer. That's weighing up that educative agenda decision versus kind of answering the question that's been asked. And I think it's got, it's a fine line between them. I think this illustrates it best.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'll just come back on that because I think it's well, I'd be interested in committee members' views. I mean, in hearing that, I mean, when you look at it, I think almost, well, at least a big part of the reason it ends up going on is, I suppose, the way that in the paper we structured the agenda decision was take, I suppose, quite a specific question and decide to answer that specific question. And almost because of the narrowness of what we're answering, it actually leads to an agenda decision that goes on for much longer because we're spending, you know, the first page and we're just ensuring that we describe all of the very specific facts to ensure that when you read the answer, you know, then you don't read the answer out of context. So it's almost the opposite thing, isn't it? The narrower the answer, the longer the agenda decision to explain it. But it could be, I mean, we have had a suggestion on this one that, I mean, obviously, first of all, we see whether the committee agrees, but if the committee does agree, that, you know, we could view this as that instead of having the agenda decision answer the very specific fact pattern, try and be maybe slightly more general in a sense that provides conclusions are right, effectively would answer the question but do it at a slightly higher level to say talk about, you know, the tax benefit in these types of participating equity instruments, if there is a tax consequence and a tax benefit that would be recognised in P&L, that, you know, where you recognise the tax benefit doesn't necessarily doesn't matter in terms of working out EPS.
See, that's my issue in this, is I think that the answer to the question is a general answer, and I think that wouldn't just apply specifically in this one scenario, whereas what we've done is we've kind of so narrowly defined the agenda decision to say, well, if I can step out slightly on one of these, does it really apply? Whereas I think there is a principle here that we're saying.
We could distill it down to a couple of the key points as I saw them, which is that you follow through the as-if accounting, which is what raises the timing questions, but I think we are... that at least the staff analysis says you follow through the consequences of that as-if accounting, and that irrespective of the location of the tax benefit that you included in this EPS calculation. I mean, those are the two
that's exactly it, yeah.
Core bits that I took out of it. So that would be the alternative approach. Let's see what others have to say. John?
Yeah, my comments would probably be pretty similar to Bruce. I mean, I didn't have any objection to the staff analysis on technical grounds, but I did feel that the agenda decision, the inclusion of a sort of worked example seems to me to be illustrative examples, and is, and I know we're going to have a discussion about agenda decisions future and them being more helpful and illustrating more, but I sort of question whether we're sort of including things which are part of accounting standards through agenda decisions as illustrative examples, and if that's the case, you know, what should the example illustrate? Should it illustrate a more common fact pattern or something that's more broadly applicable? So I think there's a bit of a debate about the format of the agenda decision. I don't disagree with the answer.
Thank you. Tony?
Yeah, like others, I agree with the staff's analysis. I also agree with the two points of principle that you just noted. And I certainly wouldn't have any objection to having a shorter, more summarised agenda decision, because the other point I was going to make is I wondered, having read it all through, why I wouldn't then take the next step and say, hey, so what if this tax benefit was distributed? And I know there's a sentence in that says the tax benefit is attributable only to the ordinary shareholders, but I found myself wondering, well, why? Is there something that says, well... when that gets to be distributed, you don't give the participating shares their slice? And so I was going to say, if we go with this, maybe you just need to be clear about why you don't get on with the iterative process. But it would be, I think, probably preferable to end up with something that was shorter.
Okay. All right. Yamsu, did you want to come in again?
Oh, yeah, just a minute, short comment on to the Reinhardt's remarks. He says something about hypothetical distribution and the tax benefit hasn't been paid yet. I just want to go back to the objective of EPS. What it says is that something attributable, that's something attributed already to the ordinary shareholders. So attributable means that it includes every profits and losses that could be attributed or belong to the ordinary shareholders. In that sense, if the tax benefit is not paid yet, if it's going to be paid in the future, it should be calculated. I mean, it should be included in the computation. So that's what I think.
Okay, so listening to all of that, what I think I'll do is, first of all, ask the committee who would agree with moving forward with the agenda decision in its current sort of form and style. And then I'll ask a second question, which would be who would prefer that we try, and we won't do it on the fly at the table, but who would prefer that we try to distill the agenda decision back down to sort of those two principles? And maybe if we did that, we could think about doing something separate, not as an agenda decision, but assuming it was all finalised, ultimately, educational material that we provide somewhere else that could, you know, do the worked example for a fact pattern. So I don't think it needs to be complete either or. But in terms of the actual agenda decision, first of all, could I ask who would prefer to proceed with an agenda decision like the one proposed in the paper?
two.
Thank you.
So, if I could maybe see, my answer to this is probably slightly predicated on where we get to tomorrow afternoon on the discussion about what we do going forward. So I'm not sure I could quite give a clean answer at this point.
Okay. Let's take a vote on view one first. View one versus view two. Who agrees with the staff's analysis that view one is the correct analysis?
We're not going under two alternatives. It's on the paper. View A versus view B.
So view one and view two. View one. Yeah. View one. Sorry.
12.
Okay. So I note your point, Andrew, but if we can just assume for the moment that we will be using agenda decisions, can I get the committee then? I think so. Can I assume that those who didn't vote for the preferred sticking with this agenda decision support us trying to distill it down to a shorter focus on two key points? People are nodding? Okay. Now, we'll see if we can turn that around to show you tomorrow. If we can't, we can't, but we'll see what we can do. But we'll leave it for there for the moment.
But now, in that view, I was attracted to that view because I liked the educational materials. Is the educational materials now out?
I think that would be a good idea still to do the educational materials. If we do the educational materials, I think we need to think about... we won't be able to do that for tomorrow. But think about the points that you have raised on timing. I think they are things we need to think about more, and also Tony's point on the iterative process.
Yeah, and just on the timing issue, we did give that a bit of thought. And what we thought was, yes, we agree with you, there should not be any double counting of the tax benefit, so to say. So in year one, if you have included the 90, for example, at the following with the example in the paper, so in year one, if you have included the 90 in your basic EPS calculation, you come along to year two, you make the distribution, and you end up with the tax benefit. And let's say in this year you are recording the tax benefit in profit or loss and not in equity. So in that case, I agree, it is in your starting number. But what we think you would have to do is basically adjust it out of your profit and loss before you do the EPS calculation. We think this is consistent with the concepts that are in IAS 33. Like, for example, if you look at cumulative preference shares, and when you're taking account of cumulative dividends, and then I think it's paragraph 13 or 14 that tells you what you should exclude from the calculation, and it very specifically tells you that the cumulative dividends that you exclude from the calculation should not include any dividends declared or paid in the period that relate to prior period dividends. because arguably the logic there is that that's already taken into account in your prior EPS calculation, so you should not be taking that into account again.
John, so I was in that view, I was exactly with you yesterday, and then as I was working through examples last night, what occurred to me then is, okay, so next, the second year, I have another $350 profit, and I go through and I assume that was all, again, in my EPS, all that was distributed. Why do I wasn't clear on why I then said to myself that dividend that I paid in year two related back to my distribution in year one. Why isn't it, no, that dividend relates to the P&L in year two, and that tax benefit was part of the tax benefit for that dividend in year two, and just put do that as part of year two's calculation?
I think working through the example, yes, I agree, there would be some judgment involved in assessing whether what you've distributed is prior year's profits or current year's profits, so I don't think you can avoid that judgment. But I think to the extent it relates to prior year's profit, you would have to exclude the tax benefit.
But I think we and simplify the model if we just say, well, assume the tax benefit for the assume the dividend is for that year, and the tax benefit relates to that year. I think we simplify it greatly.
You would, yes.
I think your suggestion that we look at something over time is a good one, and that's why I'm saying let's not do that for tomorrow. Is I think we need to go away and think about that and think back. Bruce.
Just one question I had. I mean, we talked a lot about education material here. I mean, is it possible for us to recommend adding an illustrative example to the illustrative examples in IAS 33 on this? I mean, it's not really an amendment to the standard given it's non-authoritative, but, I mean, have we done that before? We've gone to the board and said, look, we think there's a good example that could go into the non-authoritative illustrative examples, and we would suggest putting it in.
I'm not sure we've done it before, but we can have a look. I think what we need to do with education generally is find a way to make it certainly more visible. Obviously, if we start adding examples to the actual standard, we've got to then go through a whole exposure process that's relatively disruptive to the system. But so we need to balance that, but yeah. Visibility is important as well.
Yeah.
So why don't we, for a follow-up, for a later date, work through something more detailed, see what that looks like, make sure we actually all agree with it, and then we, as part of that, we can include, we can discuss what the best mechanism is for that approach. Okay. We're very conscious of visibility as well.
But
we can look at it as part of being the agenda decision as well.
But just to clarify, for today and tomorrow, we're going to go with View A with a draft of a shorter version. That would be the final product of the of this, and education would be a separate deliverable.
That's what I'm proposing. So I'm proposing a shorter agenda decision and then a subsequent discussion about what additional material might be helpful as a second step. Okay. Is that all right? A way forward? Thank you.